And welcome, everybody, to the Bangers and Classics podcast with me, James Ruppert, and him, David Malloy. And where's David been?
Oh, not too far afield this week, no? James. No, not really. I did, however, see a classic car.
Oh, good.
I saw a Morris Minor convertible.
Fantastic.
A nice blue one coming out of a supermarket car park earlier in the week. And I have to say, it did look in extremely good order.
Yeah.
It was a nice sunny day, so the roof was down.
Good.
Which is even better, of course.
Yeah.
The other thing was the chap with the garish green MX-5 with the winking light has possibly traded it for another one. It's a white one. It's slightly less garish, but it's still pretty... Let's just say it'll head in the direction of the other one pretty soon, I reckon.
Oh, well, that's good. I always like to see... I like to see, cars being used, even if they are MX-5s, David, which I did see one. But the thing is, whenever I see one, and especially an early one with pop-up lights, I think of you. It's quite terrifying.
Yeah. I say, I suppose there's a need for motorized skips, isn't there?
Well, you say that.
I do say that. I don't care. What are they going to do? Sue me. Anyway, so that was that. What about you? What have you seen?
I've seen some nice bangers, actually, David.
The butchers?
No, I was behind a Proton Persona the other day, which was a good 22 years old, going by the registration number, and that was quite good. I followed that into a petrol station, and coming out of the petrol station was a Perodua Nipper. So that was quite interesting. A bit of Malaysian action going on there. Sort of two old bangers. I saw an extremely tidy MG ZR in blue. That was good. Mm-hmm. And as what I usually do is I spread peace and love, David, wherever I go. And I did that in the Mini Cooper. I parked next to like a Honda Jazz, and there was an old lady in it. And she got out and she was so happy to see the Mini Cooper. She said, I had two of those. She said, and I had an S. And she was extremely happy about it. So that was good. I made her day. And that's really what I do. That's my purpose on earth, David, to bring motoring peace and light to the world. And I've been doing that.
Jolly good.
Yeah.
Right. Well, let's go into a different tack for a second.
Oh, okay.
Your publication, Free Car Mag, is out, the latest one.
It is, isn't it? Yeah, that's right. And it's actually out. I didn't realise it was April Fool's Day. So there was all those idiots doing things online. And you could mistake the cover, strangely enough, for a sort of an April Fool. But it is quite genuine. We can show you how to get 183 miles to the gallon. But there is a catch, obviously.
Well, you put the sail up and you go downhill.
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah, that's always a good way. No, but you've got a feature about wild camping in it.
I have actually, haven't I? Yes,
yeah, and rooftop. Right, yeah. Rooftop tents.
Yeah.
There's a YouTube channel I sometimes watch. It's kind of linked in some ways to Simon, a bloke in the woods. Mm. This one's called Kent Survival. It's run by a guy called Andy.
Yeah.
He's a personable guy. Very good at cooking out in the wild, is Andy. Yeah. I have to say that. He has got I think it's a Mitsubishi L200. I can't remember what the vehicle is, but it's kind of a similar type to an L200, a modern pickup. And he's got a roof tent on it.
Has he?
Yeah. He doesn't usually stay in the roof tent, but he has got one. And occasionally he does use it.
Mm.
If you're interested in the outdoors at all, camping, wild camping, etc., which is not so easy in England because you don't have the right to roam legislation that we have in Scotland. Hopefully that will change. Check out his channel, Kent Survival. And also check out Simon, the bloke in the woods. They're both very good, both personable people, and well worth a watch. If you've got nothing better to do than a Saturday night, or indeed any night of the week, give those guys a look, because I think you'll be entertained and, dare I say it, informed as well.
Absolutely. Yeah, I would agree with that, because you put me on to Simon in the woods, and his stuff is very good, isn't it?
Mm. Well, Andy's of a similar stripe. He's very similar. The two of them are actually friends.
Yeah.
And they've had a few adventures together as well and filmed those. So it's very good. Something I just hit upon during lockdown, I think, just casually flicked around YouTube. Thought, oh, this looks interesting. Watch it. And I must admit, I've become a regular viewer.
Mm.
So any news this week, James?
No, there's no news at all, David, is there?
No, not really. Well, never any good news, let's be honest.
I mean, I thought you might be pleased to hear that there's a brand new Lotus, as you're such a big Lotus fan, but I don't know if your enthusiasm was tempered somewhat by things, but I don't know.
Oh, my enthusiasm for it knows no beginning.
Doesn't it?
No. I did read a piece by someone who really ought to know better about it. It was a puff piece, and I just thought, what a load of old cobblers that is. Yeah. I won't mention the name of the person because I won't give them the hits. No. But it's just rubbish. It's not for me.
No.
Lotus, to be honest, isn't Lotus I grew up with, indeed many people grew up with.
No.
The fact it still exists, obviously, is a good thing. But I'm afraid I'm no longer in their constituency, if I can put it that way.
No.
But never mind. Shall we move on and talk about this week's banger classic?
Oh, okay.
And I think it's about time we talked about Fluffy Kittens.
Oh, Fluffy Kittens?
Well, at least Reliant Kittens, then.
Oh, okay.
You remember the Reliant Kitten, James?
I do remember Reliant Kittens, absolutely.
That was the other kind of Moggy on the Road.
Yeah. Apart from Jags, there were kittens, weren't there?
We also had Morgans, Moggies, as so well known.
Moggy, yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't realise we were going down this route. I'd have prepared, but
No. We don't have any prepared routes, James. No. We say what comes into our heads and just get on with it.
There's a feline theme going on here, but yeah,
feline groovy.
Yeah, that's it. But yeah, the Reliant Kitten. What a strange and curious little thing it was. I think the main thing about it is that it cost a third more than a mini, didn't it?
Mm.
I think that was the problem.
That was the problem.
Yeah.
The idea was to make a car that was cheap to run and cheap to buy. Mm. Then we get you around to do as a little town car. It was used an upscaled version of the Robbins engine.
Mm.
I think it was 848cc as opposed to 750cc unit in the Robin. Yeah. I think all it did was change the conrod.
Yeah.
To get extra capacity. It was very, very simply done.
Yeah.
But if you don't know what a Reliant Kitten is, it's a four-door, plastic bodied. I suppose you'd call it a hatch.
Well, it didn't have four doors, David, did it?
No, didn't it?
No.
Well, I tell a lie, I'll come back to that. Yes, we'll delete that bit. Yeah, it was it was a two-door hatch with a GRP body.
Yeah.
And there was also an estate version, and there was a van version called the Fox, which came along, I think, later.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was made to be inexpensive and economical to run, but as you say, James, unfortunately, it may have been economical to run, but it wasn't cheap to buy. I think they were the minis were about £1,000 for a mini.
Yeah,
the kitten was about £1,400.
Yeah.
So 40% higher. So that was quite a lot.
It was
the estate version was even more expensive than that. However, it ploughed on for a bit. And I have something I wrote earlier about it because it's quite a little bit of history. It was very maneuverable, James, very light.
Oh, really?
Oh, absolutely. But, of course, being a low-volume manufacturer, we know that economies of scale don't really apply, which obviously explains the higher price.
Yeah.
And because of its price, it never sold more than a few hundred examples a year. And I believe that from 1975 until it went the way of all things in 1982, just over 4,500 were produced.
Yeah.
But that wasn't the end of the kitten, so to speak, because an Indian company acquired the rights to make it in India. So they moved production there, and they said at the start, we've got orders for the first 2 years' production, which was going to be 6,000 cars. They called it the Sipani Dolphin and commenced production in 82, finished production in 87, and in spite of their claim that they 6,000 pre-ordered, they only built fewer than 2,000 during that time. But these people weren't deterred. They made a Mark II version in 1987. And there was a five-door version, which I believe was, at least in part, developed by Reliant at Tamworth for them. And there was eventually a version powered by a three-cylinder diesel engine. And it continued into the 1990s, but again, didn't sell in very high numbers. That's the history of it, really. But what do we make of it, James? Do we like the kitten and bangers and classics, or do we think it's a bit of a clunker?
It's a curious little car, as I say. It was quite a few around here, actually, where I am. I used to see one on a regular basis, and it had a skull and crossbones sprayed on it. And it was like a matte black thing. And so somebody sort of ran it as a sort of a slight joke. But they did use it. It was used as an everyday vehicle, which was good. I think it was a good second-hand buy. As you say, if you bought it brand new, I don't know. I mean, in many ways, it is a remarkable car in that a tiny manufacturer were building an economy car. Obviously, they hit the buffers at the end of the day, and that and maybe building this had something to do with it. But overall, I quite like it. It is sort of quite a sort of cute little thing. And I would sort of give it the benefit of the doubt, really, in that they tried hard. And at least the bodywork won't go rusty, I suppose. That's the, that's the upside. But I think there's quite a lot of them sort of in back gardens and stuff, because I think there was at least a couple of thousand on the road a few years ago. It was there was actually quite a number around still. So they do have a purpose, even though the motorcycle brigade, who usually ran Reliant Robins because of the fact that and Regals and stuff, because obviously you could run those on a motorbike license. I don't know whether they really made the transition to kittens. I mean, I would give it the benefit of the doubt. It's a it's a classic, because again, you don't see them often.
But I'm going to say it wasn't cheap, but it was cheerful. And for that reason, I'm going to call it a classic as well. I quite like the kitten.
Yeah,
it's unpretentious. It does what it says on the tin, and that's good enough for me. So we'll go with that one. And on that upbeat note, we will take a little break.
You're listening to Bangers and Classics, the motoring podcast presented by a pair of rusty old Rovers.
And we are back after the break. I'm going to try something a little bit different this week because, well, because we can, basically. You know, no one to tell us what to do. So, which is usually a bad thing, I think, with James and particularly with me.
Really?
Yeah, probably. Let's be honest. Or dishonest. It's April Fool's Day. We can do what we like. Anyway, what we're going to talk about is cars for footballers. And we're going to look for a car for a second division footballer in the 1970s. What kind of car would a second division footballer, probably a young single bloke who really lived on the three Bs, and we all know what those are, James, don't we?
I've got no idea, David, so I don't know.
But in spite of the fact I told you the other day, and I quote from a description of a former England player and indeed manager.
Yeah.
Bird, booze, and bookies.
Oh, right.
Yeah, that's the three Bs. So there we go. So what kind of car would such a player have? Before we actually get to what kind of car we'd have, let's just consider something. The average first division footballer, which was the equivalent of today's Premiership, was on under 100 quid a week in 1973. And indeed, it wasn't until about 1977 that they first made an average of a couple hundred quid a week. And then it jumped up to just over £400 a week by the end of the 70s. But for most of the 70s, it wasn't a massive wage. That's a first division footballer, but our chap plays in the second division. So he's going to be in a bit less money. So what kind of wheels could he afford, and what kind of wheels would he want, James? What do you reckon?
Well, you've hit on my specialist subject, David, and listeners. There is a book called World Cup Cortinas, which you might like to invest in, because I have researched all of this extensively and looked at what players drove over the years. And you talk about a very specific period there, David. Now, I can tell people other books that they should read. If you're into football, there are four books that you should read, and they're the only books you need. Modern football is completely dead to me. I don't care about modern football at all, but football from the 70s and 60s, yeah, I really like that. But if you're interested in the 70s stuff, then there's Eamon Dumphy's Only a Game, and that's the diary of a professional footballer, and that was a second division footballer at Wimbledon. Millwall, I should say.
Eamon Millwall. Dumphy.
Millwall, they're very nice supporters. There's another book called The Mavericks, and that's written by Rob Steen. And it's called English Football When Flair Wore Flares. And that is about a specific group of footballers, the ones that we're talking about, who were very flair players. So it's Stan Bowles, Tony Curry, Charlie George, Alan Hudson, Rodney Marsh, Peter Osgood and Frank Worthington. So they're the greatest players of all time. He goes through them. Now, there's another book that I will recommend, which is called... Now, this is very specific to what we're talking about. And you might have to cut all of this out, David. But it's called Steak Diana Ross, The Diary of a Football Nobody. And it's by a player called David McVeigh. He kept a diary, a contemporaneous diary, in 1973 to 77. And he played for... Northampton Town. So actually, no, I've got that wrong. It's Nottingham. The one that isn't Nottingham Forest.
Notts County.
Notts County, that's right. Yeah, he played for Notts County. So it's a fantastic book. And it's very specific about money earned. And so I will tell you, in 1973, they were on £25 a week in the second division, but you would get 40 quid a point. So if they won a game and got 2 points, you got 80 quid. So you would go over the magic 100, possibly, if you were lucky, depending on all sorts. So, but again, that wasn't a huge amount of money at the time. And also, I mention old David because he's very specific about the car he owned at the time. It was a trusty, not rusty, Fiat 128. It was £650 in white on a K-Reg. And he said it was a rust-free Italian motor car. And that's what took him around to so he could enjoy steak Diane and stuff like that at various things. So, yeah, and there is a lot of gambling in there. They would gamble on anything, two flies up a wall and stuff. And that's also clear from the Only a Game book, is that they would really, you can see how they would spend what little money they had. And it was mainly at the bookies. And actually, the final book I would say, if you are into cars, because there's not very many mentions of cars in those other three books, but Hunter Davis's book called Only a Game, where he spent a season with and training with Tottenham Hotspur in the 1969-70 season when they won a few cups. And he does actually detail, it's a bit like an Excel spreadsheet at the back of the book, where he does go through all the cars that they own. And that is very eye-opening as well. But there you go. Basically, David, I've researched this, they would have a full Capri.
Well, that's a good point. But, you see, I'm not so sure, because we had a great deal of individualism in the 1970s in the football field. It wasn't just condoned, it was positively endorsed, I think. Yeah. If you look at some of the mavericks that rolled around in those days, the Frank Worthingtons, the Stan Bowles, the Rodney Marshes, the George Best. If you've ever seen footage of Best and Bowles playing in a game for Fulham, you'll know what I mean. If you haven't seen that clip, go and watch it. It is terrific entertainment. Two guys who could play the game who were having a great time on the field. And of course, consequently, people who were watching the game had a great time as well. Everybody won. Yeah, I mean, you say a Capri. Now, that's on my list, James.
Mm.
But I'm going to run through it anyways for the heck of it. Footballers ain't going to be able to, that era, especially second division footballers, are not going to buy a premium mark. They just won't have the money. So we've got the likes of Ford, BL and Vauxhall. So let's look at Ford first of all. You've got Katina. Well, family man might have won. Single man. Well, he might have a clean 1600E. You know, that might be his thing. You know, obviously tart up a little bit. Capri, well, obviously, yeah, it's a no-brainer. But I think the theatre version is a couple of cylinders too far on his wages, don't you?
Mm. Oh, I don't think they'd have a 3-litre.
Yeah. So I think he's behind the wheel of a used 2-litre car. Mm. And it depends what part of the 70s we're talking about, but it's probably going to be the Mark 1 Phase 2 or a Mark 2. I think that's what he'd be driving. Quite possibly in white or black. If it's in white, he's going to have stripes on it. Row-style wheels or a cheap set of alloys to make it look a bit more flash. An Escort? Well, I have S2000. Again, just it would tempt him. It's too costly. But perhaps an older Mexico, James. What do you reckon to that?
Yeah, maybe an old Mexico, because they were quite cheap by then. They weren't regarded as classics by then. So that's an outside shout.
Exactly. And then you've got Vauxhalls. Well, yeah. A Viva, no. Family man car. In fact, there's a story I think I've told in the podcast before about a footballer who stopped and changed my mum's tyre one day in air. And that was what he was driving. It was a brown Viva. Yeah, he was a nice chap. Name was Gordon Crammond. BL. Well, let's look at BL. What about a used TR7? Maybe in the late 70s, James? The wages have risen a little bit, possibly. Mm. Oh, of course, you've got an MG Roadster or an MGB GT. But, that's as far as a BL goes. Minis, I think they'd say no. They're for birds. And to put it into 70s football language. Chrysler. Well, why ain't a Chrysler, James? Well, I'm going to go for it. The only car that would really appeal to a footballer in that era might be an Avenger Tiger. But it's a question of finding and affording one. That's it, because he's not going to be cutting a dash in him. Let's be fair about that.
No.
I've got a left field choice here. Something that looks sporty enough. It can be flashed up a bit. It's got decent running costs and has got enough room for all his kit. And his bookies lines, obviously, they probably take up half the bit of space anyway. and a Sereno 17 TS. Just something a little bit different. Stand out a little bit from the crowd, but still have that sporty appeal. What do you think?
Yeah, I suppose they're all quite good, David, but I've got a foot-high pile of shoot annuals, and they say differently. A lot of them are Cortinas, a lot of them are Capris, and they were quite boring unless they were Johan Cruyff. Then again, he wasn't playing in the second division at the time, but he had a Datsun 240Z, I remember very clearly. But
Mick Mills, remember Mick Mills?
Yeah.
He had a Sunbeam Rapier fastback.
Oh, wow.
Probably H120.
Yeah.
Peter Bonetti, who, like Mick Mills, played for England, but he was known as the Cat, wasn't he?
The Cat.
Played for England a few times. I think he played in the 1970 World Cup, I think, didn't he?
He did, yeah.
When Gordon Banks was injured.
That's right.
He had an Alpha Spider.
Mm.
Very nice car to have then or now. Yeah,
exactly.
And, of course, we've got Bestie. Well, Bestie had all sorts of things. But one of them was a Lotus Europa.
Yeah.
I mean, if you had the money, I think there was more variety to be had, and players would, you know, obviously go out and spend the pennies. But as you say, James, you know, there wasn't a lot of variety, and probably because you're limited to what you can have that's reasonably sporty, fits your sort of criteria, the limits of your budget.
Yeah.
And that's it. But I can assure you, these cars would have been bling to heck back in the days. Motor accessory shops were a much bigger thing then than they are now.
Yeah.
They sold all sorts of absolute nonsense, but great nonsense. So there we go. Anyway, if you've got any thoughts on that, what you think a footballer might have driven back in the 70s, let us know, because that'd be fun too, wouldn't it?
It would be, yeah, absolutely.
So we have one more thing to do, and it's kind of another challenge.
All right.
This is a real challenge, though. This is this week's challenge. And we're going to move away from cars this week, James.
Oh, no.
But you're going to get a major shock coming.
Yeah.
I followed the rules. I have stuck to the rules this week.
Yeah, I prefer it when you don't, David. It's much more fun.
Oh, no, this is...
I can be far more upset and petulant when think I've got the moral high ground that you've cheated, but, you know.
I thought you were upset and petulant all the time with me. All right. I wish I'd known that sooner. Yeah. right, well, the challenge is to find a van version of a classic car with an MOT if one is required. Bonus point for an ex-Royal Mail, a British Rail van. Financial guideline was £10,000, but you could go higher for the right van. And I think I'll start this one off, James, because I did have a look at quite a few.
Mm.
And my first port of call was a Bedford HA van.
All right.
Apparently it was used by the Heartbeat TV series at one time. I thought, okay, that would do. That would be perfect. In fact, the price was right. And then I found out the ad was from 2017. It's like, no. Okay, so moving on. What we look at? Something a little bit more modern. Okay. I went for a Maestro van from 1983. This one was X Fire Brigade, so that's pretty good.
Yeah.
The price was good too, but there's no MOT. So I had to pass on that. I couldn't find a Comma van that I liked that I thought was reasonably affordable. There were plenty around, but they were just a bit too pricey. I thought, I'll try and really stick to the rules rigidly for one, so I didn't go there. I didn't look for escort vans or minivans because that's just a bit too predictable. I did, however, find something I liked, and it's a 1958 Citroen 2 CV van with the ribbed sides. It kind of looks a bit like a sort of kid brother of the Citroen H van. It's grey. There's quite a lot of patina on it, I have to say, so don't expect something that looks absolutely factory fresh. It's currently for sale. It's left-hand drive. Apparently, it drives beautifully and starts on the bottom every time. The ad says the seats have been retrimmed in the correct material. Now, the seats are deck chair seats, of course. They are as basic as you like, as utilitarian as you can imagine. And apparently, everything works, including the wipers running off the speedometer, which is great. And the price for this van, James, how much do you reckon?
I think I might have seen the advert, but it wasn't massively expensive, was it? $6,995.
No, it was a bit more.
Was it a bit more?
Yeah, it came in at $9,995. Should explain also, it's got a 425cc engine, so you're not going to use it as an express delivery vehicle. Mm. It is taxed currently. It's MOT exempt, so it hasn't been MOT'd. But you know, you're allowed to do that. Personally, I would get it MOT'd because that's what I like. But there you have it. It's on Car and Classic, and I think it's a cracker. And I'd like to say to James, beat that sunshine.
Well, I quite like the idea of a HA as well, because the Bedford Enthusiast Club, as you well know, are very big fans of this podcast. It gets broadcast to all members and stuff, and they're very supportive. And I thought, well, the least I can do. And like you, David, I did stumble across a HA van from 1982 that was a TV star. And as you say, you've got to be careful with these adverts, because they are backdated, aren't they, some of these?
Yeah.
So I couldn't hang around that. Although I was quite interested in the Bedford HA van, because I'm going to talk about more books, what I wrote, but this is a very out-of-date one, which you can't buy anymore, called the Vauxhall Driver's Book. And James Bolam, who was in the Beiderbecke affair, there was a HA van in that, and I wanted to put a picture of him with the van, which I discovered. And we're going back to the 1980s now, and he refused permission for me to reproduce him standing by a Bedford HA van, which was in the show. And I think that was an ex-GPO van as well. It was like a yellow one. So that was a shame. Yeah, it was something called the Beiderbecke affair. And people may remember that, may not.
Yeah, him and B was Bullam and Barbara Flynn, wasn't it?
Yeah, that's it. Barbara Flynn was in it as well. Yeah, it was quite a good little show, actually. It was quite fun. But there you go. James Bolam, for some reason, took against me, David. So there you go.
I don't think you're the only person in that category, Sancho.
No, probably not. No, I know. But I thought he'd just play the game and just go, yeah. Whereas other people in that were very helpful. But there you go. So I ended up with a 1966 Austin A35 van, which I quite like. I quite like the A35. It's quite a good little car. They were very handy on the track. And this one, it is a sign written one as well. It's not GPO or anything, but it's got Ward Antique fireplaces actually written on it. As I have a look, I don't know. I very much doubt you could get a fireplace in the back of an A35, but maybe you could. And I quite like the look of that. £7,000. It seems to be in good nick, and it's been on the road. I think it's been off the road since 2020, but they say it's all okay. They've got a spare engine with it. They've got two spare gearboxes, so maybe they come in handy, and a spare rear axle, no less. So they can all be put in the back when we go and collect it, and it will cost you £7,000.
Right. You know who owned an A35?
I certainly do.
Yeah. Shall we reveal it?
Well, we can do.
I think we should.
Go on, David.
You do it.
That'd be James Hunt, wouldn't it?
It was indeed, yeah. The perpetual star of Free Car Magazine.
Yeah, absolutely.
He appears in every issue. But James Hunt had an Austin A35 in a Mercedes that was propped up on bricks for a long time. I think we've had this story before. But he used it for transporting his show budgies around. And he absolutely loved it.
Indeed.
This is the guy who was Formula One world champion and a very, very good racing driver indeed. But yeah, it's just the comical thing of a guy like Hunt, who lived life 100 miles an hour, driving around an Austin A35 van, is brilliantly idiosyncratic, I have to say.
It is, yeah, absolutely. But this looks like a cute little van, so there you go. It looks like it could do a job of work. It would fit into my garage. That's very important. So, maybe we'll go and pick that up.
Well, I think we should buy the Citroen as well. It comes with some spares. So,
does it?
Some of them looked a little bit rusty sitting in the boot, I saw. But I thought, that'd be great. We could have a start of Bangers and Classic Boulangerie.
Yeah, absolutely. I think we should do. Have you seen the prices of some of those vans, those Citroen
HAs?
It's unbelievable, isn't it? Wow.
When I lived in Glasgow, I worked in Glasgow in the 90s, I had a flat near the city centre, and the car park across the road sat a Citroen H van.
Yeah.
And it was kind of unloved. Nobody really bothered, but I always thought, God, that's cool. You know, it's a lovely looking thing.
Yeah.
But this is before they really shot up in value. It was before they became trendy, James, or gentrified.
Yeah.
You know, perhaps I should have bought it back in the day.
Yeah, I think you should, yeah.
Yeah, but I don't know who owned it. I mean, but yeah, it was, I don't know where to park it, really. But it was a fantastic looking thing. But the 2CV in this looks fantastic as well. It really would do a great job as a sort of little bakery, the Bangers and Classics Bakery. free coin rod with every donut.
Exactly. Yeah. No, I quite like looking at vans. It looks. I think we both probably looked at all the same vans, but they were very good.
Yeah.
Interesting.
I was never really much interested in vans when I was younger, but now I got older, somehow they seem to make a lot more sense.
Well, that's right. Well, my lorry is actually a commercial vehicle. It counts as that. There was no VAT paid on it when it was new, so technically that's a van.
Yeah, I suppose so. But it's
although it isn't, but it sort of is.
Well, perhaps we won't go there. Anyway, I think that's all for bangers and classics.
Oh, no.
We've run out of material again.
Go. That's a shame.
Yeah, I know. Well, we could hang around and talk more about football, but I think nobody would want to listen to us.
No, they'd be very bored.
Yeah, I think they would. And on that note, I'll say, obviously, as I always do, thank you very much for listening. Hope you tune in next time, and we'll try and do something completely different.
Yeah, let's hope you come running back. Or driving back. There you go. Yeah.
We'll settle for getting back in any way, shape, or form possible.
Yeah, but mostly go and buy our books. That's a good message on which to leave it.